Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios' Amazon page. Go to castwavestudios.com and click the boldly going shopping tab and search for everything from Apple iPads to zebra striped Snuggies. Oh, it's so cozy. This supports the studio and helps keep the lights on. Click the boldly going shopping tab at castwavestudios.com.
Boldly Going Nowhere is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. You're listening to an interview recorded at the Too Many Games Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Make sure to go to www.castwavestudios.com/events to stay up to date on all of our event coverage. Enjoy.
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kaepernick.
I'm Sean Holmes.
I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
Five, four, three, five, seven, six, eight.
All right, we're good. 70. All right. You sure know a lot of numbers.
Yeah. I usually do testing 573, actually, because 573 is Konami, is, you know, like Konami. And they actually have, like, the DDR machine is System 573 or something like that.
I didn't know that.
It's they pun off of their own.
I know. I just learned something today. Very fascinating. Well,
shit, I'm talking and you're not even like. Go ahead.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Boldly Going Nowhere, recorded here at Too Many Games in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm Justin Eisenstadt, and sitting right across from me is Inverse Phase.
What's up?
What's up indeed. Inverse Phase is a chiptune musician, a game composer, and self-proclaimed huge nerd.
It's on the card.
From what I've been told in the brief introduction I've received of you, is that you your most recent project is creating chiptune music out of Nine Inch Nails.
That is correct.
Where did you get that idea?
Trying to shorten the story so that everyone doesn't get bored. Basically, at a convention in January of last year, I was joking around with people that already know that I do, you know, like chiptunes and 8-bit remix cover, whatever you want to tributes. I was like, there should be a head like a hole on the Commodore 64. And I was like, And I've got a collection of like 40,000 Commodore 64 songs. Mm-hmm. It's High Voltage Sid collection. There's tons of covers and really great music in there. And so I went and searched through the entire collection. I was like, there's really not very much Nine Inch Nails in here at all. So I was like, all right, whatever. I'm at the convention. I'm in my hotel room. I guess I'll write, you know, like a minute and a half of it and surprise them tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And so I played it over the PA the next day. I'm like, where did you find that? And he was like, well, I just kind of wrote it
in my
scratch.
Brain.
And everyone that heard it came over and they're like, is that Nine Inch Nails? And, you know, like whatever. And it's just like, so everyone was freaking out, and I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll do a couple more tracks or, you know, something like that and see how it works out. And a lot of my other music is NES music, so I was like, well, maybe, you know, I'll do it on a couple other systems or something like that. You know, just kind of started fleshing out more ideas form. I finished my Terrible Lie cover on the Atari 800.
Very cool.
And then I was like, you know what, I got to do the rest of this album. So I did the rest of Pretty Hate Machine.
Yeah, well,
on
after
everything. And, you know, I couldn't afford the licenses because I'm poor. And so I did a Kickstarter last year before it was cool, LOL.
Sure.
I'm a chipster, LOL. all right, so, no, I everyone's dying right now. So I did a Kickstarter and raised some money, and fortunately it was successful and a little bit more than I asked for, which is good because the licenses turned out being... you have to get 3 licenses for every single song because I wanted to put it on CD, I wanted downloads, and you have to get a license for streaming it on the internet.
Oh, so you have to get a license for every single kind of format
every
that
kind
you release
of,
it in.
I'm going to go on the record as saying it's absolutely insane, frustrating, and licensing. Although it seems like it should be a very straightforward process, the thing is that there's a royalty that you pay, and then HFA, which, to be fair, at least, you know, they made it work. Their website makes it, like, kind of hard to figure out what you're doing, and they apply
I'd imagine intentionally so.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but every license comes with a surcharge. And, you know, so there's, like, the surcharges alone ended up being, like, half of my licensing fee.
Wow.
And it's just, it was ungodly. So, point is, Kickstarter succeeded, I got my licenses, I went to work, and then my landlord and I stopped getting along a little bit after a little while. I spent 4 months moving to another state, right in the middle of all of this. And in the meantime, all the people on Kickstarter is like, where the album? Where's the album? I funded the album. Where's the album? I'm like, come on.
Where are our
just
rewards?
Just give me a couple more, you know, like months or whatever.
Where are our prizes?
But just, you know, last week, I was like, I'm done. It sounds great. Put it out there. And shit got real. Rob Sheridan, the creative director, like he does all the artwork and stuff like that for Nine Inch Nails. He tweeted about it, and he's got a reasonably awesome geek following online, and I'm not sure if he controls the Nine Inch Nails Twitter, but the Nine Inch Nails Twitter retweeted him. And I'm not sure if Rob got it from me, because I actually communicated with Rob on Twitter to get permission to parody the cover art. So instead of, like, they have, like, a piece of farm equipment or something like that stretched out, and it looks kind of gritty, and they interlaced it and whatever. And so I kind of did an 8-bit take on his style on that and did it with a chip. And the pins of the chip are kind of doing the same sort of like reaching spine ribcage thing.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, after thinking about it, like, that's a perfect marriage between Nine Inch Nails and chiptune, because Nine Inch Nails are the pioneers of industrial music, and I would say chiptune is kind of an 8-bit or kind of an interesting evolution of that idea.
They get along. They're two great tastes that taste great together.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and Trent really likes vintage hardware, from what I understand.
Yeah.
You know, he's really into, like, old synths and stuff like that. And, you know, he just loves getting weird sounds and whatever. So, I mean, chiptunes are a bunch of weird sounds.
Yeah, I also have a very strong interest in just old stuff, old technology.
Yeah.
Like, I still collect vinyl records. I guess I shouldn't say still. I'm only 23, so I guess I got into collecting vinyl records.
We're really old kids.
Yeah, I'm old at heart.
Yeah.
But I just love the whole process by which technology, the meaning associated with it, changes as its use changes, and the perception in society and among people who go from just this is just a machine, an object, to suddenly becoming this almost religious. Like a cult that surrounding this piece of hardware.
It's pretty insane. It's kind of cool.
It's very cool.
It's a little weird at times, actually. I'll admit, but you know that's only when you get down in it. LOL.
What chipset would you say is your favorite to compose on?
Okay, so actually, like the Nine Inch Nails album, I did 8 different systems.
Wow.
On the CD.
Okay, what are
and
they?
And so, like, the CD is called Pretty 8 Machine, not just because they're all 8-bit, but
there
because
are
there are 8 of the systems, so it's like a triple entendre or whatever.
8 tundra?
8 tundra. And 8, I don't know, whatever. In it tundra.
Sure.
So, okay, let me see if I can do this. Atari 800, Commodore 64, NES, Game Boy, MSX with the Metal Gear 2 or Snatcher cartridge, which is the SCC chip.
Mm-hmm.
the OPLL, which is the low-cost version of the PC Adlib or Sound Blaster, which they put in an MSX cartridge and the Japanese Sega Master System.
Yeah, there was also I had a Master System.
Mark III, which is the right before the Japanese Sega Master System, had an FM expansion that all had that chip in it. Sega Master System itself, and then the Konami VRC6, which is in Esper Dream 2, Madara, and Castlevania 3.
So can you...
So those are the eight that I learned or whatever.
So can you actually tell, like, right, like instantly tell the difference between different chipsets just by listening to them and identify them?
Yeah, that's actually not terribly hard to do. There are a couple that throw you for a loop, but eventually when you know what to look for, like a good example is the Sega Master System in the U.S., has a chip by General Instruments called, or not General Instruments, Texas Instruments, called the SN76489, and there's someone will get on my ass for this if I don't explain. There's also a 76496 and, you know, like a bunch of other numbers, but whatever. The point is that chip sounds a lot like a chip by General Instruments called the AY38910, and that chip was in, like, the Intellivision, the MSX, the, God, I'm blanking. The ZX Spectrum, later in life, had that. The Atari ST had it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Sega Master System sound chip was in the ColecoVision. But they both, they don't have timbral control.
Gotcha.
So it's just that square wave, just that beep. But if you listen to the way they generate white noise, fuzz, the Sega Master System sounds like someone's, like, beating a trash can with a baseball bat, and the AY is really plain, like, just straight-up radio fuzz, ocean waves type, you know, lots of highs and lows.
Yeah.
So, like, you learn to pick out stuff like that.
Okay, well, and, let's back up a bit, actually, because on this podcast, we cover a wide variety of genres of music, so chiptune, for someone who has never heard of it, has no idea what we're talking about here. Just hears these numbers and this jargon. What is chiptune and how does it work?
Pretend someone took whatever pop song you're listening to on the radio or wrote their original music or video game. The idea is that there is a chip inside of a game system or computer that is recreating music on its own. Technically... You could say, like, even PlayStation 2 songs are chiptunes, but this is not actually, like, no chiptuner wants to say that.
Right.
And the reason is because at that point, recent games and that sort of a thing, all they're doing is you're getting a composer, they're writing an orchestral soundtrack or whatever, and you just put an MP3 in memory, and you're like, hey, sound card, here's your data, send this out to the speakers. But with chiptunes or 8-bit music or, you know, whatever you want to call it, the chip itself is generating the tones. You're telling it frequencies, volume levels, you know, like, you're just saying, play this note loud, play this note soft, play it with this square wave, play it that with the fuzz. And the chip generates the fuzz, the chip generates the tone, that sort of a thing. So basically, when you finally move away from chips that don't generate the tones, you're not doing chiptunes anymore.
Okay.
But other than that, it's music coming out of a game system or a computer that's really old.
Right. So I've heard of this other kind of idea, this other type of music where people take actually image files, they take bitmaps, and actually turn that into an audio file. Like, you take basically a picture and turn it into a song. Have you ever done anything like that?
That's actually a very simple concept. And there's all sorts of, like, different ways you can do it. You know, one way is to process the image data as if it's spectral data, which is, you know, like, if you look at the image and you just go from left to right or top to bottom, then, you know, like, one far end of whatever is, you know, like, the high frequencies and the other end is the low frequencies. Another way to do it is to pretend that it's a WAV file and load it into, you know, like, your audio program or whatever. And then it just comes out, you know, like, I mean, it'll sound like garbage.
Right.
You know, or there's a chance it will anyway. Like, there's a big YouTube video where someone loaded Microsoft Paint or something like that into like SoundForge, and then they just hit the play button.
Yeah, that's
and load
that's
it
the
in
kind
as
of
raw data. If that's what you're talking about, then all it's doing is, you know, pretending that there's, you know, an audio header at the beginning of it that says this is a sound file, and then processing the rest as data.
But there are actually people who are managing to do that and actually make music.
Make
out
music
of it,
out of their
image.
Cool.
Which is very cool.
A good example of someone that that screws with people a lot. He's going to love me for saying that. Disaster's Piece. Rich Freeland, he did the Fez soundtrack.
Okay.
And if you take the audio and you play it and do a spectral analysis on the audio from the soundtrack, then it'll draw a picture in your spectrum analyzer while you're watching.
That's really cool.
So, like, you know, there's like, I think I just gave away a secret of the game or something, but no, it's been tweeted on the internet like a billion times, I'm sure. But yeah, like there's lots of really cool things that you can do to, you know, make visual and audio things, you know, like work together. Me personally, I just love watching tracker files play. Like you'll just play it, kind of plays like a note roll in like one of those old automatic pianos or whatever, and so you just get to watch the notes fly by, and most of the players that play the formats show you sound waves for each individual channel, so it's all broken down by instrument. You get to watch the sound waves and everything all at the same time.
That sounds like it'd be very like trippy to watch.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the beginning of Viz plugins, you know, like, you know, visual effects and whatever for like media players and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Before there was that, you know, like in, you know, like 1991, I could watch my music play the way I just explained instead of, you know, like a Viz plugin, because there was just no such thing.
Cool.
You know?
So do you perform this music or play this music live in front of audiences? Like
yes.
At event, have you
in
done...
fact, I did yesterday.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Have you done to MAGFest or BitGen? Because those are two events that we have covered in the past.
I'm very familiar with them, and I'm sort of pseudo-staff for both in a special sort of way, I guess.
Okay, are you going to be... BitGen is in, what, like a month?
I can't go to BitGen. It's June 30th. Is it June or July?
I think it's in July.
It's either June 30th or July 30th. I thought it was June 30th.
Oh, okay.
But the reason all of my friends are going to be there, and I know all of the bands because I've been in the video game remix scene for a long time, which is one of the reasons I'm doing chiptunes. I was like, what if we did this backwards, you know?
Okay, so what other kind of projects have you done?
I used to do really, really piss poor video game remixes.
Okay.
You know, like I have a crappy Zelda 2 remix into, you know, rock or metal or whatever, and I've got a Metroid cover that I did sort of into rock or metal or whatever. But really, you should just listen to Metroid Metal because they do that. Funny thing, when I did my Kickstarter thing, the guy that started Metroid Metal was the first backer on the project.
Oh, awesome. So, yeah, we saw them at BitGen, I think last year, actually, wasn't it?
Grant Henry, Stemmage, he's such a nice guy. And the rest of the band is awesome, too. Danimal Cannon, one of their guitarists.
Yep.
And he's doing his own chiptune thing now.
I know, yeah, he plugged that. He talked about that a lot. We interviewed him back at MAGFest in January. So
He said some really nice things about me on Twitter and on some chip music forums about
the Nine Speaking
Inch
of,
album,
what is your Twitter handle?
I am just Inverse Phase, no spaces.
Oh, okay. At Inverse Phase. Awesome. So what do you have any... upcoming appearances or shows you're going to be playing?
I wish I could go to like BitGen or something at the end of the month, but actually the day of BitGen, Alice Cooper is opening for Iron Maiden.
Oh, sweet.
And I'm going. Sorry. I would and I've been to BitGen numerous times. In fact, my girlfriend used to work the ticket booth a couple years ago at BitGen and whatever. And before I even knew her, like I got my ticket from her. And it's kind of a funny story, but whatever. But I will be at MAGFest because I'm, you know, secretly involved somehow. And, you know, I'm trying to think of other things that I'll be going to. I'll be in the game room at Otakon, I think.
Okay.
So there's that. And I'll have CDs there and, like, you know, shirts and stuff.
Great.
So doing that. And then... one or two conventions, probably Anime USA.
Yeah, we're also going on to Dragon Con in That's kind of a slightly different
Actually, I think my area, my stuff would do really well there, but it's just so far for me.
Yeah, luckily we know people who live down there, so we're going to make the trek. But we will definitely follow. Yeah, do some couch surfing. We're definitely going to follow back up with you at next MAGFest. So
get in touch. Yeah.
See how you're doing there and what kind of projects you got going on.
I might
on.
Be running around a lot at MAGFest because, I mean, MAGFest is just kind of like a big giant party with all of my friends, and it doesn't stop.
It's a blast.
But, you know, like, you can definitely just poke me online or whatever. We can Skype it up.
Will do.
Something like that.
All right, well, unless any of you guys have any questions, all right, well, Inverse Phase, thank you for coming on the show.
Why, thank you so much.
Thank you for boldly going nowhere.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.